Welcome to On the Bridge. I'm Heidi Bianchi, your host and the founder and CEO of the Bridge Event Academy. On the Bridge provides a platform for me to engage and connect with like-minded event professionals, colleagues, founders, friends, and family. It's a space where we can share insights, foster meaningful conversations, build connections, and learn from each other, and have a little fun too. Let's get on the bridge together. Hi, and welcome to On the Bridge. I am very excited today to have my two number one girls, equally number one, Samantha Schneider, President, CEO, and Principal of Ampersand People, HR and Talent Consulting, and has been on the bridge before. Welcome, Samantha.
Happy to be back.
And the number one girl in my life, Delphina Bianchi, a senior at Carlmont High School and overall good time with everyone. Delphina, welcome.
Hey.
We rate equal. Like, I have known you longer, but also she's genetically tethered to you. So I do feel like it's a tie.
It's kind of tie-based.
Yeah, it's runner, pretty close. So
we'll see what happens after this interview. I don't know.
Noted.
So today we have Samantha a bit on the hot seat. So are you ready, Sam, for that?
I've been ready.
Okay. So Delphina has some questions for you about a time in your life that you worked at a very interesting place. So Delphina, I will let you start off with some questions, okay? And I will do my best not to interrupt and or talk over you. God help us.
Side bet, Delphina, side bet.
Oh, God. Okay. So I have recently read the book Bad Blood about Theranos, and my mom was telling me about how you worked there. And I just have some questions about how did you hear and find out about wanting to work at Theranos?
Great first start. So I had not had a career or interest in biotechnology or any of the STEM stuff that you're really experiencing outside of working at Electronic Arts, and so dealing with the animators and engineers there. And I was at Shutterfly, and I'd been at Shutterfly about 7 years, and a woman named Rebecca Sunshine, literally her name, and she lives up to the hype, sent me a message on good old LinkedIn, and she had this darling little picture and this jazzy little red hat, and I just had a bad day, and I was like, yes, I will respond to you. Yes, I want a new job today. So I responded to her and called her back, and at the time, there was no website. The company might have been just under 10 years old or something like that. And it was a confidential biotechnology company. So Rebecca just called me and explained to me there was this female founder. She was under 30. She had attended Stanford. It was right here in Palo Alto. And did I want to start up a recruiting practice from scratch? And that sounded really interesting to me because it's a lot of what I had done at Shutterfly. And I kind of said to myself, if you think you're this good at it, go do it again and prove it. You can do it more than once and it wasn't a fluke. So a lot of things lined up and it sounded really good, but there was not a lot of information out there. No website. I found one video of Elizabeth at 19 doing a Stanford lecture and she was wearing the black turtleneck in that video.
Deep voice at the time or no?
Yep. The voice is real. I will hold to that. The voice is real.
Okay. And then did Rebecca then interview you or who interviewed you?
Yeah. So I talked to Rebecca on the phone, just standard recruiting practice. So first phone interview, and then she and I got along and still get along. And so she turned me over to interview with a woman named Mona, who was the head of HR and an employment lawyer, which there's nothing more opposite of a recruiter than an employment lawyer. But Mona and I got along and she kind of told me a little bit about what the play was. And so then that went well. She invited me in. This is where it gets interesting. My interview time, I think, was at 8:30 or 9 at night to come meet Elizabeth and Sunny in person in Palo Alto. And so I drove in and, they were busy and they were building a business. And as a recruiter and as HR, it's my job to just be like, oh my gosh, yes. The whole time thinking, I'll fix this when I get there. It was unique. So I went in and interviewed and I sat in a room for probably 45 minutes and no one came and got me and no one showed up.
So you were just sitting there alone.
I probably had a phone. I might have had my iPhone with me at the time. But yeah, no, I had my notes and all dressed. I mean, you're all dressed up and ready, right? Yeah. Like you're hyped. And they didn't come. So finally a recruiting coordinator came in, somebody who ended up working for me and with me, and just said, oh, sorry, they got stuck in a meeting. Can you come back? We promise it won't be this ridiculous time of night. Like, no problem, no problem. Fine. Play it cool. Of course, I want the job. Sure. I'm going to be mellow. I'm not going to, you know, be that candidate that's like super indignant. So got invited back. It was still night. It might've been 8:30 instead of 9:30 or something like that. Met with Sunny. To this day, I really liked him. Like he and I just got along. So he and I had a good conversation about operations and volume hiring and the growth that they had, a lot about just sort of what I had done in the past and sort of what my sort of authentic and energetic sort of personality would do and how I would kind of grow recruiting. Elizabeth did come in and I met with her for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. She was very subdued, very thoughtful, very intense eye contact, just asked a handful of questions and just said, we like you very much and we'll be following up and we're probably going to offer you the job. And then like 3 months went by and I didn't hear back. And I was talking to Rebecca and Rebecca's like, no, they like you. And so again, like thinking about professionally, if I was running this sort of operation for a candidate and I was the client, I'd be horrified at the time of night. I'd be horrified that I was stood up and like, you know, no showed. I'd be horrified that all this time had gone by. But all I kept thinking, because I was optimistic and I wanted to come work for a young female CEO, and I thought all those things were cool and a different industry, was how easy this will be to fix if this is how bad it is now. So it very much honestly played my ego.
You're like, challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. As the issue. I very much like to be like, oh, these people, we can make this better because we like to fix things. And this was very obvious. And I knew there'd be other interesting things too, but this definitely felt like they needed my help. And honestly, because I'm a weirdo, it made it more interesting and more appealing to me that it wasn't already done and wasn't already perfect. I like to come in and build. That's just kind of what I like to do in my career.
So you waited the 3 months. I'm jumping over you, Delphina. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Keep going.
And then was it a 2-week notice at Shutterfly? Just curious, because I've learned a lot on the quitting situation. That sometimes the long goodbye is painful. So,
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. So it was 2 weeks notice and I didn't want to wrap it up. I had a good team that I could hand it over to. I'm still friends, obviously, with a lot of those people. It's not burning a bridge, but then yeah, I think I started in March.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say like how it obviously seems like it started off a little rickety, but going a little further, how were the first days like being in the office and that aspect of it?
It was really exciting and really interesting. We were in the old Facebook building. It was cool to work in a different industry. After 7 years of something, it's hard to be new. Like you'll experience this, right? When you go away to college next year, like after you're kind of the big kid on campus and you've been there and you know the people and you've got your really nice routine. Being new again is always hard, but people were very, very nice. I think they called them the Therabros. I can't remember what they called them in the
book.
We called them the Dukies because all of them had gone to Duke. But they were so nice and really welcoming, and people were really hard workers. And that was really exciting to me. So the first couple of days were great. I think like within my first week, we threw the party to announce the Walgreens partnership.
Oh, wow.
So that was a really big deal. Also, it was very much not like it was in the Hulu movie with Amanda Seyfried. But good for them. It was great, but it was also a little bit strange. And coming from Shutterfly and Electronic Arts that were consumer brands, and so about like putting your brand out there and putting your products out there, like video games and Christmas cards, honestly, are not secret or baby announcement. So the biotechnology, like learning that had a really big curve for me. I did not know the Theranos way was not the way most biotechnology or life science companies work, but it was my first exposure. And so I just said, okay, this is going to be a really interesting learning curve. And this is obviously a very different industry. And it was one of the reasons why I chose to do that versus going, I don't know, to The Gap or, you know, another kind of marketing or consumer-based company. And you probably weren't allowed in the building.
So, Sammy, I don't know if you remember, but I met you one day for lunch. Months before, I had met a friend at that Facebook office because she worked at Facebook. And it was like, oh, come up to lunch and there's a rooftop and this and that. And
then
I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Sammy works there. I will go and meet her for lunch. And I like bebop myself around the corner because I was down the street at Silicon Valley Bank. Literally around the corner. Not even 5 minutes away. I think I walked. That's okay.
Actually, yeah, it was 1601 Calvert at the top.
So I get in and I think what happened, if I'm remembering this right, is like I walked in and I was like, I'm here. And you're like, go outside.
That probably tracked. Yeah. I mean, they're,
You're like, you need to leave. You need to leave the waiting area and go outside. And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, you had to get to the doors. I'm actually really curious. I mean, I lived it, so I can give you what it was to me. Everybody had a very different perspective. But like, what did you guys talk about when you guys read the book? Like, what lens did the teacher, what lens did the school kind of take? Did they read it and not say anything? Did they read it and say, these are terrible humans? Did they read this and say, this is a good business lesson? Like, what did they kind of set it up for you?
So like a part of my class is like, we do biotechnology. So we kind of have like a little bit of that sciencey background, and with just like the labs that we've done, like, we know like how difficult things can be and like how Theranos was like being directed and like how secretive every little device or like piece of information was. It was interesting to see like how they kind of got away with it. And then reading the book with the parts of like how the article came to be was kind of interesting because it was a secret for so long. And then like little pieces sparked that like ignition. And then it was, oh, like this is not right. And I think a lot of people, especially in the labs, I know you were hiring people, so you kind of weren't in that scene as much, knew what was happening and it was not right. And they kind of got caught up in that too. The chemists and stuff kind of knew it was wrong, but like didn't know how to get away from that.
Interesting. Okay. So you guys focused on all parts of the business, but really the scientific part and what they were trying to accomplish, which I think is great because I think now that I have worked 10 years in biotech and life science, that is so important. And I think we've just lived through something that the pandemic, right? Where when everybody stops and everybody focuses on the same problem and people openly disclose how they're getting stuff done, we have watched miracles, magic, whatever you want to call it, of accomplishments. And when people come together and people share, you can actually get something done. And that's what's so amazing. And that was like the opposite of my experience. And I think it's finally 10 years out, and I've talked about this a little bit in kind of small doses because there are so few women entrepreneurs. I don't want to be one of those women that takes down another woman. Like your mom and I are, hope, you know, Ami and Michelle are setting good example for you of like, we try to be the women that help build up other women. But I think there were really interesting learnings. A lot of what I've talked to people about is the business side. So I'm really happy and excited that they've kind of focused in now on the science. We can talk about her fraud and I can talk about her quirks and those things. It's fun. It's salacious. You know, it's unique. I'm sure people are going to have charming things to say about me at some point in my career, but I'm really happy. And what I will tell you is the people, especially the scientists that I have run into since I had left the opportunity, they really did believe in the science or the pieces that they worked on. And I think what probably saw and what everybody has heard about Theranos was how siloed it was. So the scientists that were doing one particular, you know, assay and they were running it, they believed that their work was going well and that it was going to work. Maybe the people that made the box maybe had a different impression, but they never got to share doubts or success because intentionally everything was kept really isolated. And I think that's why there were so many believers or some of the scientists stayed. Now, the other thing we did here was the science was old or people had new ideas or there were potentially progress. I'm not a scientist, obviously. I went to state school. But like there were ways that maybe we could have tried to advance the science. And then other people said, and still say it was never going to work because of breaking the skins and the epithelial. Again, not a scientist. I apologize for anybody who's cringing right now. But like some people were saying it'll never, never work. And some people were saying like, wait, we actually can make progress. I was told at the time there was a German company trying to do the same thing. I think we all know people in our lives. We have a friend that's had breast cancer 3 times. I think we know, you know, we've both been really fortunate, and our grandparents and great grandparents have lived a very long time. If this worked, it would have been so amazing. And I think we've all lived through, and none of us can escape having a friend or a family member who's had cancer, just is a very simple, straightforward example. And everybody I worked with was so passionate and so driven. Had this worked, it truly would have been a game changer. They picked me in particular because they knew I didn't know. And I found that out later. There were, as I got into it and I got to see all the candidates they talked to candidates who were infinitely more qualified to run recruiting, who had run recruiting practices at biotechnology companies. Yeah. But they picked me because when they said things to me like, oh, it's science, it's secret. And I was like, you're right. Oh my God. I get it, you guys. And then I'd go talk to my team who were experienced tech, like biotech recruiters. And they're like, these words are perfectly fine, Sammy, look. And they'd pull up an internet job board, right? And they'd show me the same word would be in 100 different job descriptions. And so they're like, that word isn't the secret sauce. And I'd be like, oh, okay, you're right. And then I'd go, you know, I'd have to go back and be like, can we please use the word the recruiters need to, you know, get the right talent in. So it was interesting, but I think they picked me because of my energy. I think they picked me because I had the right experience. I'm not going to devalue myself.
No, don't do that.
I got selected. Right. No. And I joke about today's, well, I went to Cal Poly. Sunny talked about Cal Poly being a great school. We know it is. But I also think they picked me because there was a little bit of leverage they would have over me not having been, you know, biotechnology. Mm-hmm.
And then with the people that you hired, did any of them like come to you and was like, what's going on?
Yeah. A lot of them. So I took my personal HR recruiting team from 3 to, I think we were 20, 25-ish. I'm bad memory. And then yes, the scientists, the lawyers, other individuals we had hired, some came in and fully believed it, and others came in and were very skeptical and exited pretty abruptly. So I think there was kind of two camps. One of the things I worked on when I was in recruiting was like, let's have a more thorough interview process. Let's expose as much as we can. Let's explain as much as we can. A lot of times we would hire people without a job description being public. A lot of times we'd hire people and they wouldn't have seen the lab. They would have only met one or two people. There was a lot of secrecy. And I think that comes through in the book and in the movies.
Yeah.
True, not true, silly, whatever. And that was something that, yes, became a part of the culture. And who can you talk to and who can you not talk to? You know, the example was we had a manufacturing facility and people had different sections and we had to have different lunch rooms because we didn't want them talking to each other. And like all of that sort of was like, that doesn't, you know, that's not something that's normal in a corporate culture.
No co-mingling the groups kind of thing. You're like,
go to the gym at the like business park. We had to have security guards, you know, for the business park. And because she, Elizabeth, didn't want them talking or connecting. It wasn't until much later that I sort of pieced it together and other people gave me information that.
I mean, they took some time to figure out how to not, there's a lot to that. Like,
yeah. And I think,
like, you schedules know, and timing and groups and like, they were kind of, they knew
the floors, the way the building, and then we built that. I was there when I think Chester was his name, the architect that built out that brand new huge building, and like the way they built it and the doors and the floors and the rooms and the badging access. And so that kind of stuff that you read in the book, that's true. And I think again, not to kind of go down a you know, sort of spooky tales of Theranos way, but if you think about your friends or school or environments you've been in, or for those listening, like companies you've worked in, you know, Google had very open, very fun places to play, but then they also had sort of sacred space where certain people weren't allowed to go. There's always going to be cool R&D areas, or there, you know, you hope your company's always doing cutting edge stuff. But I think you get a gut reaction when you meet people or you see a campus, whether it's a college campus and you're picking those 4 years of your life, or you're picking a, you know, work campus or a work culture, even if you're working from home, and you kind of get that gut instinct. Like, do I communicate in the same way as these people? Am I as formal or proper or casual or extroverted or introvert, or, you know, whatever. And you should never pick all homogenous, you know, same is never interesting. But I think you get a sense of, are the most important things there, values, culture, mission. And for me, I think I took Theranos because it was a challenge and because it was so different than who I was. But that was a really good learning lesson.
But wasn't there a piece of you that stayed because you were still wanting to make the changes and do all the things that you initially got there for? Like, I realized it was a year, but it was
a year to the day.
A long ass year, like dog year. Is it a dog year?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, because I think I had mentioned, like, I'd grown my team from 3 to 20+. I owed those individuals. Like, I had hired them. I had promised a Sammy Schneider work experience. And the deeper I got into my work tenure, the more I realized the Sammy Schneider experience was very different than the Elizabeth Holmes experience. And so those people had quit jobs, told their families, made a commitment. And so I felt as a leader, I owed it to them to see it through, or to your point, Heidi, like make it as good as I can or be the buffer. And that's what I ended up being a lot of the time, was taking their frustrations, packaging it with a little executive bow, right? And handing it off and then taking that feedback and untethering it and kind of, people want transparency until they actually see how unfun some things are. But you do want to be truthful and you do want to explain to people what's happening or why. That always is a thing about engagement is, I've asked for this, I can't have it, why? And I think if you come up with a justifiable response, people actually understand. It's not a business need, it's not urgent now, coming soon, whatever. As long as you explain to them, they can kind of get behind the decision, even if they disagree with it. But because there was no information, it was just a decision was made and dropped on you. And then you sort of had to work with that. And that was hard. And a lot of times it was the opposite of the decision that was given to you 3 minutes, 30 days before. And so people were frustrated that their work had shifted a bunch. But so yeah, I owed them kind of a little bit of a buffer. So I did stay for that.
Were you feeling like things were going sideways before you left? Or just like
at 30 days, it was very strange. And there was an experience I had where people had disclosed things to me and said, never speak about this to anybody. And I didn't. I locked it up. And then at 3 months, I actually went in to Sunny and just said, I don't feel like I'm the right person for you. Like, I am used to like posting every job, shouting it from the rooftops, just really being out there about the brand. We had kind of joked about the cars that were going to go to those Walgreens wellness centers where the blood was going to be collected. I was like, we should get like little bugs or something, or like those, what are those hamster cars or whatever that ad was for, right? I'm like, we should have Theranos cars and brand and da 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 and put jobs on the side, because I was asked to double the company. And we did. We hired 300 people in a year, bringing it up to almost 750. But that was all shut down. And it was, no, we want to be stealth. And they kept saying it's because it's life sciences and you have to be respectful and it's health and all the, yeah, true and not true, you know? So like, those were things where I was like, ooh, I don't think this is me. I want to go work somewhere that's fun, that people, you could talk about your work. But yeah, a little bit of I owed my team and a little bit of ego. I wanted to see it through. So I did. I said, I told myself I would stay a year. And at about 9 months, I was like, I cannot do it. Minute more than a year to the day.
And you were working 24/7. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, can you talk about the like blood? I heard that you, like, a lot of people working there like got blood drawn. Oh.
So yeah. So to answer your mom's question, because this is now four, she owes us. We're gonna charge her a drink for every time she interrupts us. Not you. You can have a lemonade. So yeah, I was working both days on the weekends, basically like 9 to 6 or whatever. My meetings with Elizabeth and Sunny were between 9 and midnight, like Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, like it just when they had time for me. And so yeah, it was very intense. The blood, yes. So there is an IRS limit of how much money you can make without having to claim it. And I think it's like 550, or it used to be like 490 or whatever it was. So they would send an email out first thing in the morning. And so they would say, I need, for example, 2 finger sticks and a venipuncture. And so you get $5 for every finger, and then you get $10 for your venipuncture. And so I'd walk in, and I'm not a morning person, right? So for me, this was very hard, and I was getting there at 7:30 or 8, and I was late, basically. And my grown adult humans, professionals, would be all at their kind of desk. They had like a little pod, and they'd all have Band-Aids and things on. I'd be like, what the hell happened to you guys? And they're like, oh, you know, 5 fingers. Like, that's my weekend money. And okay. You know, like, so yeah, we did participate. They did invite family and friends in. So my mom and dad, Aunt Hope, a couple other people that you know. I don't know. Did your mom, Heidi, maybe even Ida? No, are you guys?
No, but she okay. would have. Like she was all about this.
Yeah. So they came in and we practiced in the wellness centers and the phlebotomists gave them like the Theranos experience. And they did put a Walgreens in downtown Palo Alto and they used it. But yes, they did let us participate and there were a lot of Band-Aids cruising around.
That does not sound fun, but.
Oh, it's, well, I had to interview the phlebotomist. So poor Brett on my team, we would go to Arizona and we would meet like 30 phlebotomists and they would do a blood draw as part of the interview process. Cause you know, there's nothing like a nervous interviewer with a needle coming out.
Oh my God.
A couple people did that. I don't want to go to jail, but yeah.
Okay. What was your biggest lesson or like biggest learning from your time being at Theranos?
Two things that I still take away, one about myself and one just about kind of the work I do is, and this is mostly why I talk about it, the culture was very clearly defined without being described. And I think that's really, really interesting. From right away when you start, you kind of knew not to talk to them. Right away when you start, you knew there were secret areas. You knew not to ask a ton of questions. You very quickly learned to not speak to your family, not overshare. So a lot of the stuff you read in the book about so-and-so got caught because they were overheard at a restaurant or so-and-so asked questions or you know,
yeah.
Edgar with the badge. Edgar was my buddy. So those things were very, very obvious. And the shocking thing about myself, you have known me your entire life, as has your mom, but you know, your mom and I are very much truth tellers. We are very pragmatic. We are kind of shit disturbers. Like we're not people pleasers. We pretty much want to do what's right, what's just, all those things. And so I think the learning from that was how interesting that I quickly fell into this pattern and I quickly recognized what it was and what I needed to do personally and what choices I needed to make that were very out of character to fit in. And so when I was managing up or I was dealing with certain individuals, like I very much adhered to the like, speak when spoken to and answer questions explicitly and come with data prepared. But I had the luxury of having my team actually off campus because they were out on campus, which is a whole nother story. So I still had a part where I could go be the Sammy I am and always have been. So I think because I was allowed to have a little bit of like letting some steam off over there in our little personal space, I was able to do it. But I think it's really interesting where there's so many companies, campuses, colleges, pick your thing, that are like, this is who we are. This is our mission statement. This is how we behave. Here's coconut water and ping pong. Yay, you know, free lunch, all that stuff. They never declared. We never had anything written down. It almost killed them that I made a new hire orientation deck, like all that kind of stuff. Yet everybody in that building knew how to behave. And I just think that's really interesting. It's really interesting. And it is, I am 10 years past it. I have spoken to it. I have spoken to other professionals that do what I do about it. And it's still vexing. Like, it's just really interesting. And it's why I watch all those documentaries, Scientology, like the cult things are like,
oh yeah.
It's very interesting how you can find people and persuade them to believe a particular thing and then reinforce that. And then all the external things that happen to support. And I am not declaring that Theranos was a cult in any way. I'm just saying it's interesting when you have a set of behaviors that you're expecting people to replicate. You don't declare it, but everybody ends up doing it. I'm still fascinated by that.
Is that a piece of the leadership? I know I'm interrupting you. Leadership coming from the top. I don't know. SVB did a lot around like shadow of the leader. And this is just seems like the perfect case for that. Like everyone got in line with the leadership.
Yeah. Like, and Elizabeth and Sunny were really different, like to me, because I worked with both of them directly and they had different sort of lieutenants that I think did a good job. And there was definitely like the team, Elizabeth, the scientist, and Sunny kind of had the technologists and a little more the G&A crew, which inherently are different phenotyped humans. But yeah, it was interesting. And it is definitely emulation of what their expectation was, or they did a good job trickling it down through behavior versus words.
Mm-hmm. Did you meet the guy that wrote the article?
John Carreyrou. No, I was in the building when he was there, but I was in my office. And I was in the building when Henry Kissinger came through and Schultz came through and Frist came through and the board meetings were on campus. And we definitely saw those dudes as they came in. It was very interesting. It was a little different than Shutterfly and EA. I mean, EA, we had Shaq's shoe on the bar and we had, who was it? McNabb was the Eagle. Was he the like quarterback? So I was used to seeing famous people. This was a definitely a different subset of famous people, just a different level.
Wow.
Did you guys talk about at school? Like, did you guys go through the funding or was it really just mostly about the science? Like, did you guys have schoolmates that knew them or had people involved?
One of my classmates, her parents knew one of like the scientist professors at Stanford who Elizabeth went to, but she did not support Elizabeth and like was like, oh, this is like not right. And they weren't like friends, let's just say.
Yeah, no, it just, where we live is a very silly, unique bubble. It's a lovely bubble, but it's a silly, unique bubble. And I just wasn't sure. Have you guys had other speakers come in or whatever? I think a lot of people knew people or knew of people. And it's interesting. I think the good news is a lot of the people I worked with that I think so highly of still, I've never worked with better people. I've never worked with harder workers. And it's interesting that the entire integrity of the company and everything is on the table for sort of discussion, but the people I worked with were really exceptional.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, we did talk a little bit about the funding and how, because that's like kind of a main thing in the book as well, is like how much money that she ended up getting from these rich white guys.
Totally. I'm a rich white guy in a polar fleece vest. It's like their thing.
Yeah. So that was kind of crazy. And it's funny because I talked with Nono because he actually read the book. And I don't know like how much he remembers during that time. Like, I don't think he heard of it, but he was just amazed like how they got away with it for so long. Like, I just think that's crazy.
And that guy has seen a lot at 100. He has seen a lot to get away with. So I enjoy his perspective. Yeah. And again, like when I was working there, I mean, I'm sure I saw Nono but like I barely saw my parents. Like again, it really sucked us in because we were so committed to the pace of being able to impact what we perceived to be a global health population. And a lot of us were working towards that. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's 10 years ago and it does not feel that long ago for me. And I think you were maybe in Girl Scouts or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like 2015. I don't know.
Yeah, I think 2013 or 14. So like you probably don't even remember when I worked there, but yeah.
Yeah, no.
Interesting. All right. What else did you guys talk about?
I guess, Delphina, any last thoughts about what you all talked about?
I don't know. I think we kind of covered it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just say that it was disappointing at best to see a young woman who had so much hype and support for a lot of optics. Unfortunately, not great things happened. And I think this happens to men. And I think obviously we're seeing some of it in the news, but it's an interesting community, the VC and the support community. And it's too bad that hers was so high optic. The thing I will tell you that bothered me, even when I worked there, even when I was pro Theranos in the very beginning, and I sort of didn't understand what was going to happen yet, I didn't like that she was always in the media in a photo. And the photo always made her look crazy. Like they always found a photo with her hair all disheveled. They always found a photo where she was tall. She was poised. She was by all accounts beautiful. She was thoughtful. She was very cautious and cerebral in sort of her speech and presentation. And they always had a picture of her looking crazy, or they always had a picture of her. And as you look back, Sheryl Sandberg always has a picture of her. Other women always had pictures. Like whenever Jeff Bezos is in the news, P.S. nobody wants to see him. But like, Bill Gates, John Chambers of Cisco, when they're in business news, there's rarely an associated photograph. And that was something I just laser honed on when I started working there and just thought, oh, this is always has how it's going to be, which is, again, unfair, unfortunate, which is why, again, I haven't spent a ton of time talking about it because it's what she did was wrong, full stop, end of story, regardless of gender, age, whatever. However, comma, I just think it's done a lot of damage to women scientists and women entrepreneurs. And I'm really disappointed in that because I know some amazing women who are CEOs of their own companies right now that we're having the privilege of working with. And I don't like that they're being given some sort of weird lens, even if it's sort of like a ha 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 joke. It's not funny. They're separate individuals and they should be given the credit for the work they're doing.
Did you get any good swag?
I did. Well, you know what my parents did for a living. So yes, we made some. That's so funny because the other day, a bunch of us were looking for stuff. So I have a water bottle that I still have and I have a t-shirt. And then I think I even have a t-shirt that has the old wrong logo because we ended up changing logos and rebranding when I was there. But yeah, I have some stuff. And then some other people still have their fleece and they had some like mouse pads and things like that. So yeah, not too much. And I definitely got rid of it, but I do still have the, I know nobody uses mouse pads anymore, but I do still have the water bottle. I think I gave the t-shirt away. But
Delphina, thoughts on the swag water bottle?
Free swag water bottle that no one ever uses and stays in the back of the water bottle cabinet until you stare at your water bottle cabinet and be like, oh, maybe I don't need that water bottle because I only use the one water bottle every single day.
And I have been to your house and I have seen your water bottle cabinet and it is terrifying. There are four people using water. Like, I am just me. I have two water bottles. One's Minnie Mouse. One's Mauna Kea. It's great. But yeah, I feel you on the water bottle.
Yeah.
But you need one at your desk. Like when we used to go to the office, Finny, like you need one at your desk and you need one in the car and you know, yeah. Eat one in your gym bag like you did before when we all left the house quite a lot. You did need multiple. Right, Mom?
I fancy myself a water bottle collector.
You are.
So, you know, this is a real thing.
I collect stickers, you collect water bottles, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to find something else to collect, but this is my current situation in life, so.
Well, good. I think it's interesting you guys talked about it. And are you reading other books that are comparable or other like stories about founders?
So once we finished the book, we each got to choose a company or person that we wanted to research and write an essay on. I did it on Anna Delvey or Anna Sorkin. She has like her Netflix show about her New York socialite.
You picked another female criminal. Good for you. Keep building up women, Delphina.
Yeah. But a lot of like other kids did like Bitcoin or whatever. And,
yeah, yeah. And other real great humans. Yep.
Yep. It was interesting how many fraudulent like companies and things like that happen is kind of crazy.
Yeah. If you're not cheating, you're not trying, I guess. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. Well, it's also the more sensational of the story, like the, you know, I mean, if you look at Pete Harmon or you look at some other founders who are just very like the In-N-Out Burger people, they're called, I think their name's Snyder. Like they're just kind people. Like they're people, they give people fair wages. They create good cultures and good companies and quality. Like it's a far less interesting read. I can imagine that.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
All right. Well, we're going to continue on being amazing, right, Samantha? So, Delphina, you have big shadows here that you're aspiring to grow into. Okay.
Okay.
No pressure.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes is right. Grow up and be happy. We got you.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I'm very glad you have questions. If we have more questions, we can certainly answer more. But I do have hot goss of like two birthday parties, and I will hold that her voice was real, and she definitely wore the black turtlenecks. And I've got all that stuff. My friend's restaurant, Fuki Sushi, was in the movie, even though they never ever went to Fuki Sushi ever. She ate at Orin's Hummus Shop all the time. But again, not as interesting as the scientific stuff. So.
Yeah, we like the science piece, the facts. We want the facts. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I know. Okay. It's time to jump off the bridge.
All right.
So it's a science bridge. So like, I don't know. Are we jumping off the microscope or?
I was going to say like something like a pipette. I was trying to think of like a quick joke and I couldn't get there fast enough. Yes.
Bunsen burner on our butts. I don't know.
Yeah. Evaporate off the bridge. I think last time I did a swan dive or a cannonball or something. So yeah.
Delfina, how are you getting off the bridge?
I think we're gonna centrifuge off the bridge.
Ooh, fancy.
You just won. Yeah. Way to be. Yeah.
Well, thank you both, and look forward to talking to you both again.
All right. I'm always happy to be invited to the bridge. I'm here for you.
Thank you.
All right, girls.
Thank you.
Bye.